And now, The Mentors Radio, one of the most popular and unique shows on the air today. Here each week, remarkable CEOs and leaders, including host Tom Laurie and Dan Hesse, and their guest will mentor you, challenging your thinking about life and work. Sought after for their ethical leadership and advice, and for helping others succeed throughout their careers, now these same CEOs, the mentors, want to help you achieve your highest level of profitability, success, and personal fulfillment in life, at work, and in business. Learn more and check out the show notes at thementorsradio.com. That's thementorsradio.com. And now, here's your mentor.
Welcome. I'm Tom Laurie, and I'll be the host today. Today, we're delighted to have with us Dr. Travis Bradbury, a world-renowned expert in the field of emotional intelligence. Dr. Bradbury is the co-author of the number one best-selling book, Emotional Intelligence 2.0, and his latest work is Emotional Intelligence Habits, which continues to empower individuals with practical tools to harness emotional skills. Travis is the co-founder of Talent Smart, a consultancy that serves more than 75% of Fortune 500 companies and is the world's leading provider of emotional intelligence tests and training. With a dual PhD in clinical and industrial organizational psychology, he has transformed the way we think about emotions in the workplace and beyond. His insights have been featured in major publications, and he regularly speaks at conferences around the world. Let's dive into a conversation with Dr. Bradbury and explore how emotional intelligence can profoundly impact our professional and personal lives. Travis, welcome to the radio show, to the Mentors Radio Show. Let's get started. We've got a whole lot to cover. So let's start with those who are unfamiliar with emotional intelligence. Explain to the public, it's a broad audience, what it's all about. What is it?
Sure. Well, emotional intelligence is a couple of things. It's how well you understand emotions in yourself, how aware of them you are, and what you do with that awareness, right? How you respond to what it is that you're feeling. There's also a social component to it, and it's your ability to understand what's going on with other people emotionally, and also, you know, what the world looks like through their eyes, and then how you use that information to manage relationships more effectively. This is a critical skill because our brains are hardwired to ensure that we have an emotional reaction to what we experience first before we're able to think rationally about it. So that's 400 emotional experiences every single day. And your effectiveness has a lot to do with what you do with that information.
So I first became aware of EQ, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. What was the genesis of that when it came onto the scene? What was the catalyst?
Well, there was a lot of debate as to whether emotional intelligence qualifies as an intelligence. You know, it's and that debate to me doesn't really mean much, right? Because it's certainly a skill. It's clearly a very important skill. But yeah, there was some research conducted at Yale that was picked up by a writer for the New York Times who was writing a book, and he called it emotional intelligence, and it was on the cover of Time magazine, and he was on Oprah, and that sort of opened up the field, and that's where it all started.
Well, there seems to be a pretty big need for it. I think rudeness is kind of spread like a virus today. Are people really paying attention to the need for emotional intelligence?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I hear that a lot, that it's needed now more than ever. You know, and I've been involved with the field for almost 25 years now, so I've been at this quite a while. And I think that technology really creates a barrier for us. You know, the more time we spend with our noses in our phones, the less tuned in we are to other people. Or even, you know, we need to go touch some grass, as they say, right? Spend a moment actually being in your body and understand what's going on with you instead of this constant distraction of technology.
So has social media amplified that?
Yeah, I think it just creates, you know, we're our brain evolved for face-to-face communication, right? That's what's been going on since the dawn of time. And now within the last, you know, a very short amount of time, we've created this buffer, this layer between us and other people. And it creates a really big challenge for people in how to relate effectively to other people.
So as you know, I've been running companies for a lot of years and everything. And one of the things that I try to point to for people that work for me or people that I'm trying to mentor, I talk about it a little differently. I just want to see what your thoughts are. There's a thing I call gravitas that people have. Would you say people with a high EQ or people are the ones that have this gravitas that, you know, there's a presence that certain people have? Would you tie that to gravitas?
Absolutely. We've tested the emotional intelligence of millions of people, have taken that test that comes with my Emotional Intelligence Habits book. And we find that the top performers in any job title are those with the highest level of emotional intelligence, right? So if you look at CEOs, for example, they all have a great deal of industry knowledge and experience, and they probably have a recent track record of a high financial performance. So what is the distinguishing characteristic? Well, the people that have emotional intelligence, they're present. They have, like you said, this gravitas. They connect with people. They create a strong emotional tone.
And IQ and EQ are, well, let's go back because you mentioned the assessment. I want to bring that up because I definitely want to cover it. So you've developed an assessment, and if you buy the book, you can get the code, go online and take an assessment to find out where you are with regards to your emotional intelligence. Now, you break that into four parts. Talk about that briefly, what those things that you're testing for.
Yeah, so it's really hard to know what you should work on unless you have some kind of objective understanding of your emotional intelligence. So that's why the test is so important. And we go to the trouble of putting a unique passcode in each copy of the book and letting people go online and take this test that we've given to millions of people. And what it does is it gives you an overall emotional intelligence score and a score for each of the four emotional intelligence skills. So you'll know how you score in self-awareness, in self-management, in social awareness and relationship management. But the other really important piece, emotional intelligence habits has a big number of micro behaviors, small habits that you can change to increase your EQ. And your test actually, based on your score profile, tells you which habits from the book you should work on first, because they will increase your EQ the most based on that unique score profile.
So later in the show, we're going to talk a little bit more about the habits. Now, EQ and IQ are very different, as you've already explained. And IQ apparently is something that can't change, but EQ can. And that gets back into these habits that you're talking about. Could you talk a little bit about the difference between EQ and IQ?
Sure. So, IQ is, it's not what you know, it's the pace through which you assimilate new information. That's what that's the definition of smart. And it's the same, it's measured relative to your peers. It's the same at, they've literally followed people across their lifespan. They find that it's the same at age 5 as it is at age 50. You're just born with a basically set IQ. There's not much you can do about that. The pathway for emotional intelligence is a flexible pathway that responds to changes in behavior. So when you actually work on your EQ, you increase the flow of information between the emotional and rational centers in your brain. And you can actually, what it does is it facilitates this connection, right? It's as you build new habits and build new pathways, you actually increase your EQ and make that easier to do in the future.
Are people with high EQs happier?
Yeah, there's some research that shows that there's links between emotional intelligence and happiness. I mean, if you think about it, you're going to have your feelings either way. That emotional intelligence is not stuffing your feelings; it's understanding them and doing something productive in response to them. So there's a direct path to happiness, right? There's a direct connection there versus the people who, try to ignore their feelings, and then whatever it is they're feeling ends up controlling their behavior and driving the bus. You know, sometimes it runs the bus off the road and you're the victim.
All right. We're going to be right back with Dr. Travis Bradbury, a world-renowned leader in the field of emotional intelligence. This is Tom Laurie. You're listening to the Mentors Radio Show.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie. We are with emotional intelligence expert, Dr. Travis Bradbury. His article, How Successful People Stay Calm, has more than 3.5 million views, making it the most read post on LinkedIn of all time. That's quite a record. Does it still stand?
As far as I know, yeah.
Okay. So what are some examples of people who have, we've talked about what it is, people who have low EQs, low emotional intelligence.
Sure, sure. Well, people with low emotional intelligence, a hallmark of that is they tend to do a lot of finger pointing and a lot of blaming. So because they're, I use that metaphor of their emotions are driving the bus, they feel at the mercy of their surroundings. And as a result, they tend to blame everyone else and situations for what's happening to them. They don't feel empowered. Whereas people who are masters of their emotions, it's very empowering, and they realize that they have a say in what happens to them.
So going back to this assessment and all of that, and over the course of the years, again, in my career, there are people, many, who I think believe they have an IQ, high EQ, mm-hmm. but they don't. You just watch them in action.
Sure.
It's, you have any idea what, how many people truly have a high EQ?
It's a fairly small, I mean, if you measure, if you, so our test has, it's statistically normalized. So it has a 10-point standard deviation. And what that means is that you need to be 10 points above the mean or below the mean before statistically you're significantly different than the mean, right? You're truly above average. So a lot of people take that test and they score 72. And they're disappointed because they feel like they're below average. Well, average is 75. So you're right there, right? So what percentage of people are at least one standard deviation above the mean? Only 16% of people. So the number of people that actually have a truly sort of scientifically high EQ is pretty low.
But again, EQ provides a critical advantage both in your career and in life, from what you've talked about in terms of people that move forward. It's crucial.
It does. And that's why we find that the top performers, you know, regardless of job title, it's individual contributors, middle management, leaders, senior leaders, and the C-suite, it's emotional intelligence is the distinguishing factor that sets star performers apart from the rest of the pack.
This is Tom Laurie. We're with Dr. Travis Bradbury, author of the number one best-selling book, Emotional Intelligence 2.0. So the what are some of the misconceptions about emotional intelligence that you run into?
Well, I mean, a big one is you know, especially in, you know, we're talking about the difference between IQ and EQ. A big misconception is that people think if you're high in IQ, you're not necessarily going to be high in EQ. But the truth is they don't occur together in any meaningful way. So that bias exists because people that are high in IQ and low in EQ, they stick out like a sore thumb, right? These folks are very, very noticeable, but they're not any more common than any other combination. So, you know, you can be low in both, high in one and not in the other. It makes no difference. It's different for everybody.
But again, you can take the assessment and then you can grab your book, Habits. It's got 35 areas where you can work on things and you can improve. I think that's the bottom line. You need to understand where it's the old know thyself. And once you know thyself, you know where to put the energy, right?
Yeah. And that's the idea with the Emotional Intelligence Habits book is that you can change your habits. You can improve your EQ. So regardless of where you score, whether it's low or high, you can bring it up by adopting the strategies and habits in the book.
Do you have an example or two of some people that had maybe low, medium emotional intelligence and focused on improving the habits and came out ahead over the long term?
Yeah, you know, there was an executive, a telecommunications executive that I coached, and it was interesting because so we say that emotional intelligence is a foundational skill, right? Emotions are the primary driver of your behavior, whether you like it or not. Everything passes through your limbic system before it goes to the higher order parts of the brain, the rational cognitive parts of the brain. And what we find is that when people work on their EQ, it trickles into everything they do. So this executive, she was a very driven leader, a very intelligent, skilled leader, but not necessarily great with people, right? She's a bull in a china shop. So we're working on her EQ. And she was also a softball fanatic. She was the coach of her daughter's softball team. When I would meet with her, she would tell me how, you know, how many inches her daughter's pitches would break. And you know, she was obsessed with it. So one day she comes into our session and she says, yeah, one of the parents came over to me during practice and, you know, whispered through the fence, you're getting coached, aren't you? You're working on your emotional intelligence. And she said, yeah, I am. How did you know? You know, so we weren't working on her abilities as a softball coach, but by working on this primary aspect of her behavior, it trickled into everything she did and it improved her her skill set in a lot of things.
Well, one of the things that just triggered with your as you were talking is that in the world of marketing, where I've spent a lot of time, and I had as a guest Harold Burson, who really was a pioneer of PR. I had a very interesting conversation with him, and I work with a lot of different people, looking at marketing numbers and analyzing and figure out where to do your sales effort and whatever. The bottom line is everything I read, everything I've learned of it, what is it, or even raising money for a company, 80% of a decision to purchase something is based on emotion. No matter how, you can look at, I'm in the venture world, you can do all sorts of business plans and still not get someone to invest. Yet somebody can walk in, grab somebody emotionally and walk out with several million dollars. And I've always highlighted the fact that emotion plays a big part of not only that interaction with people, but on how we buy things. I mean, it's a clear example of what you're talking about.
Yeah, your emotions are, you know, like I said, everything, every signal, everything you see, touch, taste, smell, it goes through your limbic system. So you have an emotional reaction to the world before anything else. And absolutely, in marketing, or if you're making a pitch or trying to persuade someone to your way of thinking, when you connect with them emotionally, you're connecting with the root of their behavior, the core of who they are and what's important to them.
And as a result, you can influence them.
Absolutely.
Which gets down to the heart of what you're talking about. We're going to be right back with Dr. Travis Bradbury, a world-renowned leader in the field of emotional intelligence. You can listen to this show and past shows on all popular podcast platforms or by going to our website, thementorsradio.com. That's thementorradio.com. Subscribe while you're there so you don't miss any future shows. This is Tom Laurie, and this is The Mentors Radio.
And now, back to The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie. We are with Dr. Travis Bradbury, the author of the best-selling Emotional Intelligence 2.0 and Emotional Intelligence Habits. His best-selling books have been translated into 25 languages and are available in more than 150 countries. So over the break, I made a comment, and I'll have you talk about that, is that you can take all these tests, you can hear it intellectually about emotional intelligence, how important it is, but you and I both know often the instruction or the didactic part is there, but people go out and they don't change their behavior because they don't apply the things that we're talking about. I'm sure you're seeing that as well. I don't know. You do a lot of training. What do you see in the training that you do? Of course, you're working with them all the time.
Yeah, well, it's like you said, the people that put in the work to change their behavior are the ones that see results. And, you know, the reason that's is because your brain loves efficiency. If you're a yeller, you have pathways in your brain that reinforce that response to people irritating you. When you decide, well, I want to do something, when I feel angry, I want to do something more productive with that. I want something that's better for my relationships. I'm not going to yell. The pathway that reinforces yelling actually withers and dies. So the neurons grow branches, they branch out to each other, and those branches die. And then a new pathway forms as you form new habits. So your brain realizes, oh, he's serious about this. We've had, you know, five people make him angry in the last month, and he hasn't yelled once. And it starts, it loves efficiency. So it starts forming new pathways to reinforce that behavior. So when you actually work on your habits, you physically change your brain and you catch yourself doing it without even thinking about it eventually.
Do people need a coach?
It depends. I mean, I don't think getting a coach is realistic for everyone. I think it's a must for people in senior leadership roles. But for me, the reason I write books is I try to instill that wisdom in book form. I mean, Emotional Intelligence Habits is 420 pages long. It's basically everything I know about EQ. So if you read that, we're up to speed. And I don't know. I mean, if you really put in the effort, I'd say that's as good as a coach.
Or you could have a friend or a spouse or somebody that could, when you say this is what I'm working on, they could at least point out when you go off the road a bit, huh?
Absolutely. You want to create accountability. You want to, I mean, what I recommend to leaders and their teams is to have everyone read the book, right? Or whoever your accountability partner is. It could be a coworker or your spouse or your friend. And then there's a common language around it. You know, hey, this is what I'm working on. I'd like you to let me know what you see. But yeah, I think that accountability is really, really important.
Now, your book is broken into two parts. What are they? And explain, I'm curious, when you say emotional intelligence at large, what does that mean?
Yeah, so emotional intelligence at large is this idea of these are situations we all face, regardless of, you know, where you're at in life. You could be a student, you could be a seasoned executive, you could be a basket weaver, you know, it just doesn't matter. This is the stuff we all run into. And the other section is emotional intelligence at work. So this is the stuff that, you know, we're talking leadership skills, we're talking productivity, we're talking, you know, managing stress in the workplace, dealing with a bad boss. These are very workplace specific things.
And you have 35 habits in the book. And just so that people know what you're talking, what's in the book is you've got things like neutralize toxic people, know when you're being lied to, develop a growth mindset, unlock the power of your personality, make smart decisions. And then in the at work part, it's become a great leader, get motivated, survive a bad boss, master conflict, be persuasive. That's something that's a hot button for me, for people. Avoid integrity traps, which is a real issue today with people. So in that, I mean, you've got all these things and it's terrific. So you've really, and each of these sections has all sorts of bullets under there. So it's not just the title. What are the, if you had a quick fix, what would be the top three things people should focus on that would get the immediate results or fairly quick results?
Yeah, I think a big one for most people is to manage their stress more effectively, get their stress under control. We all know that stress is bad. It compromises the immune system. It's linked to things like heart disease and diabetes and depression. But stress is an absolutely necessary emotion. I mean, we don't get out of bed in the morning without some feeling of stress, some desire to act. So what you want to do is you want to keep your stress you want to keep it intermittent. You don't want it to get too severe or too prolonged. And they find that when you allow that to happen, it actually causes degeneration in the areas of the brain responsible for self-control. So failing to mitigate your stress actually makes it diminishes your capacity to manage your stress. So that chapter has dozens of habits, you know, specific things you can do to get your stress under control so that you keep it from being too severe or too prolonged. Those are the two things you want to watch out for when managing stress.
And then I think one of your top three is sleep. That's a hot button right now. I'm seeing all sorts of programs of sleep and ads and everything else. So that's a hot button.
Yeah, there's a massive amount of research that's been coming out over the course of the last decade that shows how important it is to get enough sleep and sleep of sufficient quality. And that's because, you know, during the day, toxic proteins build up in the neurons in your brain. This is a byproduct of normal neuronal activity. And you can only remove those toxic proteins when you get enough sleep and sleep of sufficient quality. So the thing that I recommend is, you know, obviously I can tell anyone to sleep more, and that's not always feasible for people. People have toddlers, they have, you know, jobs, they have all kinds of stuff, but anyone can clean up their sleep hygiene. And we are, the vast majority of us are shooting ourselves in the foot, right? We're drinking caffeine late in the afternoon. Caffeine has a 6-hour half-life. It greatly interferes with your sleep. Anything you take to help you sleep, right? A couple glasses of wine, Benadryl, a Valium, NyQuil, it interferes with this elaborate process your brain needs to go through when you sleep. So there's a whole chapter on cleaning up your sleep hygiene so that you get this high quality sleep and you don't have these toxic proteins impairing your thinking during the day.
I'm guilty of some of those.
We all are. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to be right back with Dr. Travis Bradbury, a world-renowned leader in the field of emotional intelligence. This is Tom Laurie, and this is the Mentors Radio.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie. We're with EQ expert Dr. Travis Bradbury. He has transformed the way we think about emotions in the workplace and life. If you like the show, help others find us by giving us a 5-star review on this podcast platform. Now, organizations, we've talked about individuals. Tell me about what you do when you go into an organization. How do you tee things up to improve the overall EQ of an organization? And tell us a little bit about, maybe you've got an example or two where you've done this and what has happened as the outcome.
Yeah, the biggest thing we're trying to do is the same things in that Emotional Intelligence Habits book. You want to go in and give people the tools that they need to change their behavior, to understand their emotions better, to respond to them more effectively, so that this can trickle into everything they do. I'll give you an example of some work I did for Therma-Tru Doors, which is a division of Fortune Brands, a Fortune 500 company. And they were going through a period of rapid growth and change. They recognized that the leadership they had at that time were not the leaders of the future. They weren't necessarily equipped to lead a company that was growing and changing as fast as they were. And they decided to work on EQ. They said, you know, everyone went through sort of the traditional training, but then the real issue was they had three options to work on their EQ. They could work with a coach. They could use an online habit building system just like that. It's a lot like the Emotional Intelligence Habits book, but it was before that book existed. And then they had an option to do basically a goal tracking system that would remind them. And these were all optional. So what they found is that of the people who worked on all three things, who actually worked on their EQ, 100% of them had an improvement in their performance. And I don't mean an improvement in their emotional intelligence, though they did. I mean an improvement in their bottom line performance. They moved up in the succession planning matrix for the organization. So if they were a head of operations, their division experienced an improvement in operational efficiencies. If they were the head of sales, sales improved as a result of them working on their EQ. We also found that anyone who at least used one of the methods, so they actually tried to change their behavior and form new habits, 82% of those people saw an improvement in performance. Now, the real question is, what about the people who said, I've hugged enough trees for one lifetime. I don't need this stuff. I'm not going to work on it. Well, 82% of those people saw no improvement in performance. So the vast majority of them were not able to improve their performance because they weren't doing anything new, right? It's the folks that were actually bringing a new skill set into their repertoire and forming these new habits and changing their EQ that were seeing changes in their performance.
So going back to your habits, thinking about the work environment, there's some bad bosses and there are toxic people.
Sure.
How does this work out in those organizations maybe you can talk about some of the habits on how to deal with bad bosses and also toxic people.
Yeah, I've found, you know, the sections on toxic people and bad bosses are some of the most popular chapters in that Emotional Intelligence Habits book. And It's because it's a tough one for a lot of people. You know, relationships are easy when our interests are aligned. And some folks are just, we're stuck with them and they are really, really hard to deal with and people don't know what to do. So the method that I introduce in the book is you first need to have an objective understanding of who you're dealing with. You need to understand what they're doing and why they're doing what they're doing, what their motivations are, because their motivations are very different from your own. That's what makes it hard for people to understand. So the toxic bosses chapter and the toxic people chapter all identify the different types of toxicity that you see and what the motivation is behind these people. Once you have that information, you can then choose to do something differently. So you have a new way to speak to these people, to connect with them. But I also teach readers how to establish boundaries, because that's the biggest thing that people struggle with in dealing with toxic people or especially a toxic boss or coworker, right? This person you're stuck with that you have a professional connection to. There are boundaries that you can establish. You just need to know what they are. You need to know who you're dealing with, and you need to know how to set these up. So that's something that I teach in the book, is like having good boundaries, knowing when to separate yourself from this individual so that you can maintain your sanity.
And when you're in an organization doing the training, are you working in groups or working individually, or I'm just curious.
Yeah. So we like to do, over the course of my career, it's usually a combination. Like I said, the books are really important because each individual can go and have their own learning process and go work on new things. But we absolutely do. You know, the other combination would be some classroom training, some ability for people to process this information in groups, to create that common language. People talk about the organization's culture and how it connects to working on EQ. And then for the more senior folks in particular, it's working with an executive coach. I think that having that one-on-one sounding board is, you know, when organizations are willing to fund that, it's a gift for the people that get to participate in that, because it has a really big impact on them.
So I had the good fortune early in my career of working with somebody that you may know of, Tony Petrella. Tony taught at Pepperdine in Columbia, but his main thing is he's one of the pioneers in organizational development and was the head of the OD network for, I think, 10 or 15 years. He's since passed away. But he had all sorts of interesting things about how to deal with the culture and understanding what to do, things you're talking about. And we weren't talking about EQ. He practiced it, but that hadn't been coined. The phrase hadn't been coined.
Right.
But what I did in one organization is I brought in a organizational development professional, psychologist, who would roam the company. I won't get into all the details. We had to do it to make sure people felt she could be trusted. And then we would have an organizational meeting with those who reported to me as I was CEO and those who reported to them. We'd have a monthly meeting and she would just say, what I found in the company is we need to do a better job at maybe bringing people on board, or we're not doing a good job at educating people on their specific. But she was like a doctor to the organization. But she was it was fascinating for me because she came up with all sorts of things we could do to improve the overall emotional, I would say, relationship aspect of the company where there was trust, a high degree. You may have never seen anything like that. It was phenomenal in terms of what we did, so in Silicon Valley, which has a turnover rate of about 25 to 30% a year, we had one of the lowest turnover rates in the Valley. And a lot of the search firms told us it was really hard to get people out of the company. So going back to the work you're doing, if you do it well, and turnover is a big expense, a lot of people don't realize how expensive it is. You're reducing I would imagine you're going to reduce the turnover with something like emotional intelligence.
Absolutely. And, you know, the more savvy organizational development and HR professionals that we've worked with at different organizations, they tend to know that the people that work there have all the good information. So they would use us as information gatherers, right? These training sessions are an opportunity to let people say what's working in the organization and what isn't, and how emotional intelligence connects to what they need to change culturally. And they would then act on that, right? And let people offer input and change their organization with a connection to EQ. That has a big impact. In terms of emotional intelligence as a skill affecting retention, I'll give you a real interesting case study they did at the U.S. Air Force, where they were turning over more than 35% of their civilian recruiters annually. So they would hire these civilian recruiters, take them through an extensive training program, and if they didn't hit their quotas in year one, they were gone. They had to get rid of them. And they began testing applicants for emotional intelligence. So they basically went to the same pool of people they would have already hired, and they said, we're only going to pick the ones that also have a high EQ. Their turnover went down to less than 5%. By hiring for emotional intelligence. So obviously you can hire for it, but you can also develop it. It doesn't matter who, you know, for all your folks that are already there with butts in seats. I mean, these, you can take their EQ to the next level.
Hey, great story. Before we go to the next segment, let's do one more habit, because everybody wants to be, I think, maybe not, you can tell me, wants to be liked. And one of your habits is how to be more likable. Could you talk about that? We've got about 3 minutes in this segment that maybe you could talk about likability and some of the things that some people can do to be more liked.
Yes. Likability is a big one of the topics in the book that people really respond to. And, you know, likability is really about understanding what connects you to other people. So it isn't changing anything about you, but that chapter has, about 50 different habits you can employ that improve likability. And you'd be surprised. I mean, some of them are sort of tried and true things, such as using people's name, but you also have things like, you know, just asking people more about themselves than you talk about yourself. I mean, this is something we all tend to get caught up into, where we're really interested. We want to share, and we sort of overshare, and we don't give the other person a chance to talk. So, you know, a lot of times how you let someone speak and be present in the room affects how much they like you. So you're not really doing anything different other than being more curious about people and being more connected with people.
And what about gossiping in an organization?
Yeah, gossiping is a lot of people's toxic trait, so to speak. You know, it's very, very tempting. And it makes you, it does not improve your likability, because, you know, either, you know, you're typically speaking something that everyone already knows, and you're giving it a voice and kind of making yourself look petty, which is kind of an Achilles heel for a lot of otherwise very likable people when it comes to likability, is getting sucked into gossiping.
And what would you say to those people who are self-deprecating?
You know, self-deprecation is an interesting one, because used the right way, it has a strong connection to humility, right? But some people overdo it, and they think by just constantly just beating themselves up, they're showing that they're humble, and then they end up being unlikable because people get tired of it. What I find is the people who are really good at that, they're good at balancing just a little bit, just enough self-deprecation to show that they don't take themselves too seriously, without beating it to death.
And something that's important today, sharing too much on social media.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a tough one. And, you know, where you end up force feeding people and they don't like it, and they don't respond well to it. And you can do that on, you know, basically any social media platform these days.
Great, great stuff. We'll be right back with Dr. Travis Bradbury, a world-renowned leader in the field of emotional intelligence. This is Tom Laurie, and this is The Mentors Radio.
And now, back to The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie. We are with Dr. Travis Bradbury. So tell us a little bit about, who were your mentors?
Wow. My mentors, you know, a big part of my career started when I started writing books. I started my business in my 20s with one of my graduate school professors, And there was a guy that was in, she went to the same school I did about 12 years. She graduated 12 years before I did. And there was a guy in her cohort who was writing a book with Ken Blanchard. Ken Blanchard is best known as the author of The 1 Minute Manager. And he said, look, you know, I'm writing a book with Ken. This is really important. This is a really, you know, in our kind of business, this is a great way to let people know about your thinking, is to capture your thinking in a book. And I ended up chatting with Ken a little bit and getting to meet him. We created the assessment for their book. That's kind of my big method, is tying, you know, having an assessment with the book to show people where they're at and what they're learning. But I learned a lot from him. You know, I mean, one of the first things he told me was that the biggest mistake authors make is as soon as they finish a book, they get busy writing the next one and they don't really give it enough time to spread. He said, you know, when he wrote The 1 Minute Manager with Spencer Johnson, who's another guy that's probably sold, I don't know, 40 or 50 million books over the course of his career. And he said, you know, every single day we said, who are we going to tell today about this book? How are we going to spread the word? He's like, that's how a book takes off, is, you know, write something useful, but then make sure you give the word an opportunity to spread. So I learned a lot from him.
So what did you do to spread the word?
You know, if you think about, I have this big, over the years, I've developed this really big following on LinkedIn. So it's things like that. I'm part of their Top Voice program, and just under 3 million people follow me there. I mean, if you're listening to this, you're welcome to follow me on LinkedIn. But, you know, it's about giving people a connection to your ideas. So I write 3 articles a week on LinkedIn. And that's part of how I'm spreading the word, is giving people nuggets, useful information that they can pick up at regular intervals to connect to my thinking. But I certainly, other than that, I talked to everybody I knew, you know, in town. I flew around the country and did, you know, radio and television interviews and just anything I could to spread the word. But I think that social media is a pretty effective way to share these days.
And what are you doing now?
Well, so, you know, the beauty of what I'm doing right now, I sold my business right before COVID. So I'm able to just write and share ideas, which for me is really liberating, because I always had to balance the writing with running the business. And, you know, running a business, as you know, can be very demanding on your time and your energy. So now I'm really just focused on connecting with readers and connecting with my following and giving them new, interesting information. And that's how I was finally able to write Emotional Intelligence Habits. It was my first emotional intelligence book in almost 15 years. And my first long one.
And when going back, I mean, what drew you to, well, first of all, getting a dual PhD? I mean, there was something further back. Somebody mentored you, influenced you. What were the influences that took you down this road?
Well, I've always been very entrepreneurial and business minded. And as I started college, I got really passionate about psychology and I felt kind of stuck. I felt like I either needed to get a clinical psychology PhD or an MBA. And then I came across a very unique dual PhD program in, you know, clinical and business psychology. And really no one pointed me to that. Maybe a career counselor at school told me about it, but I just dove in and researched it and decided that was the program for me.
So any last thoughts? We've got about 10 seconds and then we're going to go to break or go to the end of the show. Anything else you'd like to add to the that we haven't covered?
Yeah, just that you're not stuck. You can change, you know, old habits die hard, but they do die. So give it a go and see where you can go with your emotional intelligence.
Great. Our time is up. Travis, it's really been an enlightening discussion on emotional intelligence, something that's near and dear, as you can tell, in terms of my level of interest. It's something I've been following for years. I became aware of it, particularly in a book called Head, Heart, and Guts, which was written by Dotlitch at Mercer, which really made it clear on how important it was. So you've made the case that being smart is not enough. Good job. We've been with Dr. Travis Bradbury, world-renowned expert in emotional intelligence. For those interested in learning more about the EQ assessment and Dr. Bradbury's books, go to our show notes at our website, thementorsradio.com. That is thementorsradio.com, and we'll be posting links there. Join us next week at the same time for the next edition of The Mentors Radio. Until then, this is Tom Laurie. Signing off for today. Remember to be all you can be and keep the candle lit for all who struggle in the darkness.
It's been The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business. To get more information about the program or a sponsor, to download a podcast of today's show, or to leave a question for our host, go to thementorsradio.com. That's www.thementorsradio.com. The preceding program, copyright CBJ LLC. All rights reserved.